This Stu Lectures episode features President and CEO of Predictable Success, Les McEwen, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2011.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's great to be here. I just want to say thank you to David and Claire and to Andy and Alex and all of the team for inviting me here. It really is a privilege. And for all of you, just for coming and for making this what's already been a magical day and a bit, right? Just been superb. And what a great set this is, isn't it? I'm really delighted to see the chairs back. It makes me think that the Flintstones have landed a late night talk show. I'm just waiting for Fred to come in, you know, some theme tune music, and maybe Barney Rubble as the sidekick and interview somebody, but no, you've got me instead. I want to talk about something that's become deeply unfashionable, and understandably so, in the last number of years. It seems quaint, sort of out of touch, naive, unrealistic to talk about or think about anything in even a vaguely utopian mindset. And it's sort of understandable when you think of all of the things that have happened over the last number of years. But the problem is that once we abandon this sort of a mindset, there's really only one alternative. The world that we live in is really much too complex to expect it just to be pressed on pause, you know, like an old video, and just sort of wait for us all to catch up with what's happened over the last few years. The problem is that what I see a lot happening, I'm going to talk mostly from a business background, but what I see happening in almost any mindset, any area that we operate in, is that over the last couple of years, for a number of reasons we'll quickly look at, we have defaulted to an assumption of a dystopian outcome in what we're doing. I don't want to go so far as to talk about despair. I don't think that, of course, there is some despair in some parts of what we're trying to do. But by and large, we've really got to a point where we're starting to accept that stuff is degrading, that we're not really getting on top of and in control of what's going on. And, you know, when you think about what we've been through economically in the last number of years, even particularly, I know weather here is a constant topic, as you probably guess from my accent. I'm from Northern Ireland, where weather means 47 different types of rain. but I now live in the US. In the last number of years, you know, the notion of trying to understand what's going to happen has just become ridiculous. We had a whole thing with Hurricane Irene, which if you've got some bourbon in your hand tonight, I'll tell you just how ridiculous it all was. A 24-hour news cycle about something that really came to naught. When it comes to even things like the migration of workers globally, we've seen stuff happen, and not just in North America and South America, but throughout Europe, where we don't really understand the implications, the broader patterns of a lot that we're seeing. Even in things like the wars that we're seeing fought, old patterns, old models, as we get into these asymmetric conflicts and frankly don't know what we're doing to get out of them. We've just lost the sense of control in so many areas. We feel like we don't control events. And a lot of what we were hearing from everybody yesterday is about the illusion of control. The problem is that we need control in some areas in order to make forward progress. And what I've seen happen over the last number of years, as I try to think it through, is this, and I wish I had filled it in, because now I'm struggling really hard to, let's see, oh yeah, okay, here we go. thank you, Steve Jobs, Apple, and Keynote. What I think has happened is that at some point, I'm not clever enough to know when, the rate of change in terms of the amount of information that we get has become so large that our ability to draw pattern recognition, understand what's happening, and most importantly, communicate that understanding to each other has crossed. And why is it that so much of what we know is deeply profound comes from literally aeons ago? You know, whether you want to go back to the I Ching, the Upanishads, the Bible, whatever you want to reach back to for some deep profundity, it came out of a time when the rate of information that we were analyzing was changing so slowly that we were able to take not just years, but generations to get to arrive at a profound understanding of just about how to live. Now information and events, the definition of which, by the way, is rapidly coalescing, are happening so fast, and the rate of change in the information and events that we live with is happening so fast, that our ability to draw patterns out of them, and most importantly, communicate the understanding of those patterns to each other, is diminishing. And we lose that sense of control that we have. And we're now all, many of us, in a state of perplexity. And that's really what events like this are here for and why they're so important, because at a micro level, individuals are seeing things in tech, in healthcare, in climate change, in food, in all of the areas that we've been talking about. But the ability for us as a group, as a wider organization, as a wider entity, as a social construct, to understand those patterns on a macro level is diminishing, despite the fact that our communication tools have got broader and wider and faster. They're not good yet for pushing patterns out. We communicate in little micro nuggets of information, very hard in 140 characters, to boil down the essence of the I Ching. Oh, wait a minute, that would be a good challenge, wouldn't it? Just thought of a workshop for tonight if you want to do that. And so we all find ourselves in a sort of massive global version of, you know, the old fable of the six either blind or blindfolded people, whichever version you read, who are gathered around the elephant, and they're all feeling different parts of the elephant and describing entirely different experiences. And it's only when we pool those that we really get a sense of the picture as a whole. And that's why events like this are so important in the environment in which we live, in which the flow of information has crossed our ability to shift and share the pattern recognitions that we see. And I want to come back to this just at the end, but what I want to spend a little bit of time doing with you is to explain to you real briefly the pattern that I recognize, the pattern that I work within. This is, I guess I would say, my life's work. This is an understanding of how, in the area that I work in, how businesses grow, how they stall out sometimes, and how sometimes they decline. It's actually all about how any group of two or more people achieve common goals. This holds for businesses, not-for-profits, political campaigns, relationships, anything where a group of two or more people are trying to achieve common goals. But I work in the area of business, so it's what I know best. And I'm going to really rapidly run through this in a business context for you, and then I want to come back to the macro for a moment or two. The reason why I know this, by the way, is that, again, for reasons that are probably best dealt with in a somewhat more liquid environment, by the time I was 35, I had launched, by myself and with other people, 42 businesses. I was obviously suffering from some severe mental issue at that time. I had launched a business like a tool and die manufacturer, a PR company, a specialist publisher. I had the master license for Pizza Hut for Ireland, selling flat Italian bread to Irish people. That was real fun. Really enjoyed that. And then I spent 10 years with a partner who was also a serial entrepreneur. And we wound up with a consulting firm of about 100 and something people, 13 offices worldwide, helping literally hundreds of people launch businesses year after year after year. And even a thick Irishman eventually begins to see some common problems, some common themes. And that was my partner, and he told them to me, and I'm going to show you. So this is what I see happens. As I say, I'm going to run through this quickly in the context of business, but whatever area of enterprise you're in, if you're trying to achieve common goals with two or more people, this will apply to you. Everything starts with an early struggle, very complex phrase that I've given this. And in business, that's trying to find a profitable, sustainable market. And that typically takes 2-3 years in business to find a profitable, sustainable market. And there's a high infant death syndrome here, infant mortality rate in businesses. Over 80% of all new ventures don't make it through early struggle for all sorts of reasons that we'll not go into. And that weeds out, in some sort of a Darwinian fashion, those businesses that go on to what I've very technically called fun. Because that's what it is. It's a fun stage in business, and it's when the myths and legends of the business are built. It's when you're mining that market that you found, you're growing through leaps and bounds, you're stealing victory from the jaws of defeat week after week, you're having a real ball. And with that success comes growth, and with growth comes complexity, and eventually at some times, boom, the business hits what I call whitewater. And whitewater is really when the success of the business has become such that the visceral way of running the business that we've done so far begins to fail. There's not the transparency from founder-owner group to everything that's happening anymore, and we can't run everything on an improvised way. Even if we have Rob advising us minute by minute, we've still got to put some systems and processes in place. And this stage that I call whitewater is a stage where really when the business professionalizes itself. A lot of people choose not to go through whitewater and come out the other stage and instead go back down to fun and stay as mom and pops. Perfectly valid way to run a business. Stick in fun and not put the systems and processes in place. But if you do that, you get to the stage that I call predictable success. And essentially this is a stage when you can scale the business to whatever size you want it to be, or whatever size the industry will allow you. You've got the platform in place to grow as big as you want it to be. Setting aside external events, minor tiny caveat. In predictable success, theoretically, you should be able to stay there as long as you want. The reality is, having just done one good thing, put systems and processes in place that got us through whitewater, guess what we do next? Put more in place. And the business lurches forward into a first decline stage that I call treadmill. And treadmill is when we've become over-systematized, over-processed. Many of you will have worked in a treadmill organization where form is over function, where it's more about ticking the box than what the box is there to really measure. It's when we're going through the routines. And it's just a little drudge-like. It's a little treadmill-like. It's a natural stage for businesses to go into. In and of itself, but what you want to do, obviously, is take your foot off the systems and processes, get back to predictable success. If you don't do that, unfortunately, what will happen is the business will slide forward. It'll hit a stage that I call the big rut. And the big rut, though I've drawn it because of the shape of the paper, that's why, as just the... sort of like co-equal to fun. Actually, the big rut tends to be a very long, slow decline. Typically, organizations in the big rut, Microsoft, will have a lot of legacy income. They'll have a big bank balance, and they'll be able to carry on like this for a very long period of time. The difference between the big rut and treadmill is that in the big rut, you've lost the ability to self-diagnose. You like being in the comfort zone of there not being any change. You don't want to shake things up. We don't want to make it any different. We like it like this. Try to innovate and it's really bleh or meh, depending on which side. Would bleh or meh. Would you be more a bleh or a meh audience? I don't know. Thinking bleh. Bleh. And nobody wants to make it any different. And there's only one, there's no recovery from the big rut. That's the problem, and that's why it's so dangerous to allow yourself to slide into it. And eventually, you hit death rattle, and that's not very pretty, and we'll not talk much about that. You're either bought out, or somebody buys the name, or the customers, whatever it is, you die. So on that happy note, the other thing that I've noticed is all of this happens for a specific reason. And the reason is the mix of people who are running the business, essentially, at any one point in time, or in charge of the enterprise. And all businesses start with a visionary, somebody who's got great grand plans, who views everything at a 30,000-foot level. Often charismatic, often very good communicators, not always, but usually. Obsessed with making a real change. The problem is they've usually got a mild ADD, so that everything is fundamentally, crucially important. This is the most important thing we will do. Look at that. We are going to be the best shoe manufacturers in the world. Comes back from a vacation for 2 weeks. I think we should get into tents. Transferable skills, right? Shoes, tents, shoes. Right? So visionaries are, you know, wonderful at really focusing and getting highly viscerally engaged with something and then finding something else to get highly viscerally engaged. And they sort of give you whiplash. And so they really need to work with somebody that I call an operator. And they tend to find themselves an operator at a real early stage. And an operator is somebody that works at runway level, checks things off at a list, gets things done. They take the vision and they translate it into the day-to-day activities. Often it's two people with separate roles. Sometimes it's a highly psychotic, schizophrenic individual who moves between both. Sometimes it works like that. Sometimes it's a group of three, four, or five who shift those around together. And together they're very, very effective, and they're who take the business through fun. And they can make things happen. They really do make things happen. And they're a symbiotic team. They need each other. What happens is that when the business hits whitewater, they need a third type of person, what I call the processor. The processor is the person that brings the systems and processes in place. And the difficulty here is, and why whitewater is so painful, is that this is an unstable triangle. These three don't get on terribly well together. The processor, particularly, and the visionary tend to butt heads because the processor slows everything down. That's what you want them to do. Brings order, forces people to stay attention to the rules. The visionary intellectually understands all that and wants it to happen for everybody except them. Okay. So they're still bringing in their bright new ideas and throwing it around. And these three, left to their own devices, will just shuttle backwards and forwards, and usually the processor gets marginalized and thrown out, and they go back to fun, and then they try it six or seven times. And eventually what happens is somebody learns that we need to each step outside of our visionary operator processor-ness and act in a what I call a more synergistic mindset. I've got to stop scratching my visionary urge or my processor needs. And that's the foursome as a group that really keeps the organization in predictable success. If the business then moves forward into treadmill, what happens often is that that's when the visionary leaves. The visionary doesn't like treadmill. It's not what they signed up for. And they often take the snakes and ladders approach and go back at this stage, leaving the other styles. After that happens, you're not surprised to know that the operator usually leaves fairly soon after, or often with the visionary, and that's what pushes the business into the big rut. Leaves us eventually just with the processor taking the business through bankruptcy. So again, on that wonderfully warm note, what I wanted to share with you is that's the pattern I see. I've spent 30-something years working on that. I spend my career and my life helping people using this model. Organizers asked us to suggest a couple of books. In a move of shameless self-promotion, if that's of interest to you, this is my book on the topic, released it last year. It's a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. I'm very, very proud of it. You can get it on Amazon right now and bookstores. In January, my second book, which is about those management styles, comes out. If you're really interested just in understanding patterns, and I want to turn to the macro now for the closing few minutes, I strongly recommend you read anything by Christopher Alexander. Those of you who are in his business, architecture, town planning, this will be old hat. But if you're not, everything this guy writes is just joyful. It's an understanding of how we live from a pattern perspective. And it was reading his book that really made me want to try to reduce what I understood to an easily replicable model. So I highly recommend that. My big do is to give a bewildered business person clarity in 7 minutes. The work that I put into that model was about 23 years in understanding the actual stages, and then about 4 or 5 years just getting the terminology right. Those phrases like whitewater, I can sit with a bewildered founder owner who thinks his business is in death rattle. And in 7 minutes, one of the most joyful things that I get to do over and over and over again is to have him or her go, "You mean the business is not dying? In fact, if I do the right things, I get to the stage of predictable success." Or a VP in a senior organization who has put the foot to the floorboard and the business just isn't moving, and I can show them that they're in treadmill and what they need to do to fix it. To give someone clarity in 7 minutes is a powerful, powerful tool. And I aim to give back a sense of direction in 7 days and control in 7 weeks. That's what I've built everything that I do to try to help people achieve. That's my big do. Much more importantly is I want to challenge you as your do to have a little do that's as big as my big do, which is find your own pattern. We desperately need all of you to share what you see, what you know with the rest of us, because your perspective is only your perspective. Whatever it is that you do is something only you can see. I mean, every one of us walks around like a global GPS these days. We're all taking in what we know and what we see, but it's unique to you as an individual. At this point of crossover, at this time in our development, we really need to be able to pool what we're doing and seeing together. I need your pattern. I need you to devote your life to getting to know it better and better and communicating it with people. And maybe for some of you, need you to decide what your pattern is. What is it that you're going to know better than anybody else? What maybe you already do know? What you think you might like to know? And share it in the ways that we do here. And it's only by doing that and by building that sharing that we together get an understanding of what it is that we're involved in here, and maybe start to push the balance back again from a dystopian mindset, to not be ashamed to talk about a utopian view of what's going on, because we're beginning to gain control again of what we see. Thank you very much indeed.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.